like lets you decide which
program,
which one you want up front.
Yeah.
Oh.
What you do? No whammy.
Stop.
Whammy.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Welcome to Twat Radio. I'm Mad Jimmy Simi.
I'm Froy.
I'm Sean.
And we're going to talk about affordable sound treatment solutions for you home recording enthusiasts. I know a lot of the listeners of Twat Radio are also the contributors, so maybe we can give you some tips that can maybe help you out in your little setup. Right?
Right. So I suppose the first thing that we should probably touch on real quick is the fact that a lot of people get soundproofing and sound treatment mixed up.
Yeah, that's right. We're not going to be talking about soundproofing because there's really no inexpensive solution for soundproofing, which is actually preventing sound from escaping the room, which is quite difficult.
Yeah.
And expensive.
It involves exotic materials and stuff, or
lots of mass and
double partitions and things like that.
But we will be talking about sound treatment or acoustic treatment within the room, and basically it boils down to preventing undesirable sound reflection, right?
Yes. Well, you know, a lot of people have, like we do here, square rooms or rectangular rooms. I mean, they have a tendency to be that way, so you have a typical, like, flat ceiling and parallel walls and everything, and basically, if you set up a room mic, if you have a small recording setup and you have a mic with a Omni setting on it, you know, put the mic in the center of the room and switch it to Omni, and then record something with it. You really hear what the room sounds like, and usually it's not great.
Yeah, like a lot of professional studios, when they build from the ground up, they actually angle walls in just very slightly to prevent true parallel surfaces inside the room.
Right.
And why is that? standing waves.
Oh, yeah. It's hard for me to read from back.
Okay. I got the show notes way far away. But standing waves and slapback echoes, basically, if you have a sound wave that hits a wall dead on and reflects back, and there's a parallel wall behind you, it'll almost move back and forth in the same pattern until it attenuates or dies out.
Yeah, and sometimes too, you'll actually hear like that strange refraction will have like almost a different EQ to it. You know, it'll have like a, it'll sound completely different from what you're actually trying to record, so you'll get this really weird, like, ambient noise in the background, and it's almost always bad if you're in a small room.
Yeah, and it has a lot to do with the same sound waves repeatedly hitting the microphone in a very predictable pattern, I think, which is also a cause of phasing problems.
Right.
Which can also be bad.
Yeah.
Now go into detail the phasing.
On phasing?
Issues. Yeah.
I'll let you go into detail about
phasing.
I
just saw that on the show notes. I already know what phasing issues.
Phasing happens when the same signal hits the microphone in a timing such as it can cancel itself out.
Yeah. A lot of times, too, let's say you're miking a drum set and you have some overheads and then you have a snare mic. And your snare mic picks up the snare sound, and your overheads also pick up the snare sound, and sometimes the two snare sounds don't agree with each other, and obviously anyone who's looked at a waveform closely sees that, you know, it's looks kind of like a sine curve, and it you know, if the two curves of the same sound hit each other in like contradictory ways, sometimes the EQ will sound really weird, sometimes it'll sound really thin or tinny, or
just makes it difficult to work with.
Yeah, it makes you have to drop mics out and things like that. The room can actually do that to you as well. I mean, without having more than one mic, if you have something really close to a wall, or even if you have, say, a mic cranked up so that it's kind of hot and you're miking one thing, if the mic is particularly hot, it will actually capture more of the room sound as much as what you're actually trying to record, and it'll do the exact same thing.
Yeah, and like as far as phase cancellation goes, it's actually quite difficult to get a full-on phase cancellation, but what usually happens is certain frequencies will drop out, resulting in, as you described, like a thin or tinny sound.
Almost always undesirable anyway. So yeah. What we should talk about is what we can do to try to help prevent this. And really the general philosophy is if you have a bad room sound, then you want to try to take the room out of the equation as much as possible. You know, and aside from close miking everything, acoustic treatment is how you do that. It's how you try to make the room sound better and make a better recording environment out of an otherwise unsavory acoustic environment.
That's right. And acoustic treatments can range from lots and lots of dollars all the way down to stuff you find around your home. And we're going to try and touch on the things that are less expensive, things you might find around your house or can purchase for pretty cheap from almost any store in your area. So we basically have two goals when we're going to treat a room, and that's absorption and diffusion. So first let's get into diffusion. And basically what diffusion is eliminating the parallel surfaces in your room so that the reflection of sound happens in a more sporadic and complex pattern. So when sound does hit the mic again, it has less of a chance to cancel itself out.
Right. Diffusion is important to note because if you have your room completely 100% dead, it does have a tendency to make things sound a little unnatural.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously you can compensate for that by using plugins and things. And, you know, if your room sounds bad, really, a synthesized digital environment is probably the best option. So if you make your room really dead, you can plug in reverbs and things. And sure, there are probably a lot of purists that would completely argue against that, but I'm sorry, not all of us have the money to afford, you know, the construction of an ideal studio. And so if you can try to diffuse things by eliminating parallel surfaces and putting in other, you know, hard objects in the room that sound will reflect off of, then you can actually kind of synthesize a larger room because the sound waves bounce off things in other directions and actually take longer to reach, you know, the microphone or the original sound source.
Yep. Some common items that you might be able to use from around your house. Bookcases work well, of course, filled with books and maybe other trinkets and things of that nature. Maybe some wall hangings, but of course you have to be careful of vibration problems.
Yeah, they might rattle.
And one thing I read recently is popcorn texture. Like, you know, sometimes you find a ceiling that's got that popcorn, like, I don't know how you describe it, like a ceiling rash.
Yeah.
That will help, especially high frequencies, but it really eliminates a flat surface over the entire ceiling area.
Anything to break up a large flat surface will help. I mean, even just a little bit of texture.
I mean, you don't have to cover your entire room with like a bunch of bullshit, but
you know, and really what it comes down to is just listen to it.
Yep.
If you like the change that a certain thing has made, then keep it. You know, like in our studio, we even have something as simple as just a big pegboard with stuff hanging off of it and cables and cymbals and things like that, but it does break up, you know, the continuity of a big flat wall.
I think the hubcap does something too.
Right. The hubcap hanging from the furnace duct.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Our signature sound.
And the monitors we never use sitting over in the corner.
Yeah, just a bunch of items.
Yeah, just all the useless junk that you have in your studio, keep it there and it becomes useful again.
It's a good reason not to clean up.
Yeah.
All right, so
that takes diffusion.
Yep. And then there's absorption, which is absorbing sound and keeping it from reflecting back off of surfaces. And the most common treatment you'll see in studios would be studio foam.
We have a lot of studio foam in our studio.
Which actually isn't that expensive, unless you have a large room and try to cover a large area. But you don't need studio foam covering every square inch of your room. You just need it in some key spots. to help reduce some of the reflection. And for about $200 or so, you can get quite enough studio foam to apply to, like, we've got, what, a 22 by 11 room?
Yeah.
And it works very well.
Yeah, and one thing that you can do, too, a tip that I've heard, is if you get a bunch of studio foam and you're not really sure where to put it, you can take masking tape and just take the studio foam and just kind of tack it up in different spots with just four pieces of masking tape and, you know, put whatever you might record a lot, like a, I don't care, like a drum set in the middle of the room, or put it where you're going to record it, maybe, or a guitar amp or whatever, and try recording it and compare, you know, do an A-B test with no treatment and then with the treatment, and maybe move it around if you have a particular spot that you put something. Maybe try, especially if you have something that needs to go close to the wall because of space issues, like maybe your drum set has to be within a proximity to a certain wall, and you get this weird slapback effect from the wall behind it, but there's nothing you can do, then try putting foam back there and then record it again and see if that helps, and try moving it around. And when you've got things put where you think they're going to be the best, then, you know, take the masking tape off and use the adhesive and go to town.
Yeah, and you can even take foam or carpet or anything like that, wrap something in a blanket, but like just even have one board or a few boards or something you can move around and kind of
right
manipulate. You can just put them around a single amp,
right, like a gobo
to, get a little portable. Make it seem like you have more foam than you can actually afford.
Oh, almost like a little impromptu faux ISO booth.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, like on that note, you know, some people rent apartments and don't want to put adhesive on their walls. And what you can do is buy sheets of Luan, which is a thin wood boards. They're actually quite flexible, but they're also pretty sturdy. And you can cut out in the size of the foam blocks that you'll be using and apply the foam to those and hang those like pictures. And then that also gives you the option of moving them around, but then taking them with you if you happen to get evicted for being too loud in your apartment.
Because, at least you tried to save the walls.
Right, because keep in mind that they help treat acoustically the space that you're working in, but they do absolutely nothing to prevent it from escaping.
That's right. There is one myth that people used to use back in the day, and it's that egg cartons stapled all over the room will have a sound absorption effect, and they will to some extent, but not well enough to go through the effort of finding 10 billion egg cartons and stapling them across your entire room.
That's funny, because I've never heard of that.
Radio stations used to do actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, just because it looks like studio foam doesn't, or it's shaped like it, doesn't mean
get
that
get egg cartons and we'll paint them blue and red. Sorry.
And like Sean was saying, carpet. A lot of people use carpet. I know a couple of low-power radio stations that actually outfit some of their rooms completely in carpet. And it really, really deadens a room.
Yeah,
but there is a downside to carpet, right?
Oh, there's the only bad thing about carpet, and I mean foam does this too to a certain extent, but carpet really, really traps dust. And so, especially like a lot of studios and stuff, if you have done some things to try to soundproof it, like a lot of people, us included, seal up the room, you know, with caulk and get the door seals to fit really tight, because that's one of the cheapest ways that you can really try to keep sound contained, is to prevent air movement out of the room.
Yeah.
But the drawback to that is that, you know, the ventilation might not be as good, or it just gets really, the air just gets really stagnant in the studio. And just from people being in and out of the studio, you know, you create dust, and carpet traps dust big time. And you need to just keep in mind that if you're going to cover absolutely everything in carpet, if you're allergic to dust or that kind of thing just bothers you, you're going to be cleaning it a lot, and it's going to be difficult to keep clean. But really, you know, it just depends on the environment.
That's right.
And if it gets slightly damp, again, carpet's going to contain that as well, you know. And it just, when it's on the floor, it's one thing, but when it's on your walls or even on your ceiling, it's quite another.
Heavy curtains and drapes also tend to work well, But if you don't have those around your house, I can tell you from experience that really thick drapes can cost a lot of money, a lot more than studio foam.
Yeah,
so
if you have extras sitting around, even mattresses, if you have like old, nasty mattresses, you can just pop that thing up against a wall, and it's, you've got plenty of absorption, and it kind of diffuses too.
As long as you don't mind sacrificing the room space
or the aesthetic appeal of that wall.
Yeah.
Or you could also, make like a convertible thing where it could like fall down and be an actual bed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for the hardcore studio rat.
Those overnighters.
Real late sessions.
Or the pimps.
I'm done. Kick the mattress.
And speaking of thick things like that, furniture also works well. Bass traps are something that a lot of people overlook, including us to some extent, but a lot of people don't think of bass as reverberating in a room, but it does, and what it can do is create sweet spots and overly powerful areas.
And one of the big things about bass traps is if you have the room in which you have your monitor set up.
That's
because
right.
what the corners of the room do is they kind of collect bass frequencies and then spit them back out in goofy patterns, and they have a tendency to, you've probably heard it before, like somebody's house where they have a subwoofer in the room, or somebody's studio monitor environment like ours, where you walk around the sound source, and especially the bass, but the sound just changes as you walk around the room.
Yeah.
And really you want to try to make it as consistent as possible. So bass traps kind of help diffuse that situation. They kind of suck up all the frequencies and don't let them escape in the corners where they're bound to reverberate and amplify themselves.
Yeah, but carpet won't work for that unless, you have something rolled up really thick, because bass traps require a lot more material. They have to be more dense.
They have to be more dense, and they have to take up the corner.
That's right. So
particularly in the bottom towards the floor.
Yeah. Or top two, I've seen sometimes.
Yeah.
But usually in the eight corners of the room. Right?
Yeah.
So if you've got easy chairs or small pieces of furniture with large cushions, those can work well. If you want to drop a little bit of money, you can get a room's worth of bass traps for, couple $100.
Yeah, I think they tend to be like eight bass traps would probably run you the same as a pretty ample amount of studio foam.
Yeah.
I think bass traps are kind of expensive.
Yeah, because they are thicker and more dense, usually. So anyway, that's about it. Happy acoustic treating. And I hope you can avoid those standing waves and phase problems. This has been Mad Jimmy Simmy.
Why don't you just try that one again?
This is Mad Jimmy. I'm Mad Jimmy Simmy.
I'm Froy.
And I'm Sean.
And you've been listening to Twat Radio at www.twattech.org. If you have any questions, comments, flames, or sarcastic remarks, you can email me at madjimmysimmy@gmail.com. That's madjimmysimmy@gmail.com. That's it. See ya.
Yeah.